Welcome to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. Well, if you're worried about education, talk to our neighbor, our Chapel Hill neighbor, Bill Coby, who is right now the highest appointed education official in the state as chairman of the State Board of Education. Many of you know him, first of all, as the director of athletics at Carolina, as our congressman, as a state Republican Party chairman, as a candidate for governor, and now in a field. Bill, first of all, thanks for coming.
And it's great to be here.
I mean, you know, here you are in the middle of the liberal capital of the country, of the state, and you're a loyal, calm, cool, collected Republican, and very happy, I think, to be surrounded by the enemy.
Well, I don't see it that way. People are great in this town. Yes, most of them differ with my approach. But Nancy and I have loved living here for 45 years, and we feel accepted.
And how does, I mean, but like sometimes when I go back to Charlotte, and you know, it's turning Democratic, but yeah. My friends are largely good folks who disagree with me about politics. And so I'm not as, from the liberal side, I'm not as forthcoming about jumping out and saying something in Charlotte, as I might in Chapel Hill. And are you careful about?
Well, if I know that someone disagrees with me, we can talk about sports and a lot of other things, travel, that we can have a fun relationship and go out and play a round of golf and that sort of thing. So, you know, sometimes it's just best for your personal relationship not to get into an argument.
But sometimes, on matters of conscience, when somebody comes out with a low blow, and you just bite your lip and say, it's just not going to do any good to respond, or do you say, no, on this one, I've got to jump in and make a calm comment?
Yeah, there's always exceptions. but it's really your demeanor. It's how you say it. Everybody's entitled to their opinion and their point of view, and you just have to respect that. And you've got to realize that you may think you're right, but you could be wrong.
Well, the other thing, I mean, there, it's not like you're the only conservative or the only Republican in town. There's a large number of people, particularly in the business community or folks your and my age who've worked in business and been surrounded by people.
Well, also, DG, there are a lot of folks that have moved in from out of state, as I did, and a good number of them share the Republican point of view.
Let's talk about education, which is something that your commitment to education at the K-12 level and also at community college and university, I mean, you're for education. And a lot of Republicans are for education, but the word is that it's cut the public schools as the program of the Republican administration. That's not the way you talk, though. You talk about building up the schools.
It shouldn't be cut. And I'd like to defend the fact that Governor McCrory and the General Assembly inherited a very much down economy where we have the fifth highest rate of unemployment. And I'm excited about what Governor McCrory is going to be able to do to turn this economy around. Now, here's where there'd be a little disagreement with some of the local folks. I do believe in supply-side economics, and we're competing with the other states for businesses and jobs. And if we can get down our income tax, both business and personal, just a little bit more, I think it'd be very helpful. But he's out there every day selling the state of North Carolina. And let's look back. You know, the Republicans have not been in office that long. And our friends, the Democrats, who were in office the last few years, you know, they weren't able to give pay raises and that sort of thing. They had to cut. But yes, there's more cutting on the table. And DG, we have to deal with reforming how we deliver Medicaid. it is really, really hurting us at this point in time. I mean, you're talking about hundreds of millions of dollars of gap. That extra money, if we could recapture it with reform, would do a great job helping our education system, which, you know, our education system is over half of our operating budget in the state.
Well, is the what's the status of the Medicaid crisis, and what is the governor's proposal to capture to do, or is that a federal problem?
No, it's really our problem. They, you know, pay more than we do as a state. But we have been fairly generous in benefits compared to other states, and we have got a model that is not working. I think there's a lot of overpayment. There's a lot of tests and procedures that are taking place that probably aren't needed. So there has already been set up a nonprofit that's doing managed care. Governor McCrory would like to expand on that and invite more managed care organizations into the picture. But, of course, you always have people fighting for the status quo because, you know, if you're a doctor that has a thriving practice or your hospital's doing very well, you're not sure you want to see a change.
You say this so nicely, but, I mean, correct me if I paraphrase this wrong, but you're basically saying we have one problem, that is Medicaid, that we have to address because it's draining money and keeping it away from education. And we have one opportunity that we must address, and that is bringing more jobs and businesses into the state.
Right.
And education improvement or the halt of the decline of education resources has to wait. Has to wait until we take care of those things. Is that what you're saying, though?
I mean, and it's a painful thing to say. I hope it is a very short wait. You know, the governor proposed a raise for all teachers. I mean, 1%, that's not much. But since he proposed that, the Medicaid figures have come in much higher than that. So the state Senate and the state House have no increase in their budget. I'm an optimist, DG. I believe, you know, we are at the bottom and that we're going to the top. I think our unemployment picture is going to get a lot better. I think our job, you know, the prosperity of the state's going to get much better. I just sense we're on the threshold of some really good things. The old economy of North Carolina is gone. You know, the textiles, the furniture, the tobacco that we had that is not there now. We have a great agricultural state. It's the biggest industry in our state still. So I think we're about to turn the corner.
And, I mean, some folks would argue, and I think I'd be on this side, that what's paid off for North Carolina in the long run has been the sacrificial commitment to education at all levels, more than a poor state really ought to do, you know, largely at the higher education level. You know, these great state and Carolina, plus the other, these were created on the backs of the sacrifice of our forebears, and that sacrifice has paid off for us. Same thing to a lesser degree in the public schools, which is your responsibility mm-hmm. as chair of the State Board of Education. But as a poor state, we've poured resources in to that educational enterprise, and it's paid off. You know, it's paid off for us. And now we say, well, we got to take care of these other problems. We got to get these businesses here. We're willing to sacrifice this education system that brought them, and we think we can attract them just with a few pennies less or a few percentage points less in their tax rate.
Well, DG, it's much more complex than we are even talking about here. For example, we have been – one of the reasons why we could be sacrificial is we've been a business-friendly state for years, and we have to be business-friendly – more than the other states. We're in a competition. And if you look at the other states, many of them are having the same problem, particularly as you related to higher education. It's gotten more and more expensive through the years to carry a big educational system. So we're not alone in that. And yes, we have sacrificed and we have made the higher education affordable, but it's not like we're alone. We're going to have to fight our way through this.
Well, talking to Bill Coby, Bill is their Chapel Hill neighbor. He's the chair of the State Board of Education, and he and I'll be right back after this short break. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. My guest is our neighbor here in Chapel Hill, Bill Coby. Bill is currently, I guess, still new. I won't say brand new. He's the new.
Almost brand new.
Chair of the State Board of Education. In that, he's the top appointive and volunteer public education official. And Bill, as most people in Chapel Hill remember, is a former athletic director at Carolina, former congressman. Like me, after that, you ran successfully for Congress in the same year I lost.
But I run unsuccessfully.
You joined the group of of happily unsuccessful political candidates and maintained an active, a really positive, active participation primarily in Republican politics. The State Board of Education position, though, while it's a partisan appointment, you don't run for that. There's really in education, if you do it right, the main things are nonpartisan, aren't they?
You're right. I mean, if you care about children and you want the best for them and you want to have a prosperous state and a state that can attract good employers and that employers can thrive in this state, we're evenly split on the board now. It's half Republicans and half Democrats, and we get along great. I mean, we have no problems. We're pushing on the same cart and trying to move it forward.
Well, you have this longstanding, challenging relationship with the elected superintendent of public schools, and she is a Democrat.
Yeah.
And she has the constitutional sort of authority, but the State Board of Education has the policymaking responsibility. How is all that working now?
Some of the lines are a little blurred. We certainly have the authority to make the policies, and she is the chief administrator of the department. There has been lawsuits and conflict through the years, but let me tell you, June Atkinson is a very fine person, and we've established just in a little over 2 months what I would consider a great working relationship. I know she's a duly elected official. She's going to be out there saying things that I don't agree with and vice versa, but it doesn't affect our personal working relationship.
Well, what are the things, putting aside all of my worries about, policies and political and resources, when it comes down to your meetings and what the board's doing versus what the superintendent, June Atkinson, is doing, what's going on over there?
Well, there are minor differences, but we can work them out.
What are the things that you agree on that you're working on and that you're providing resources for? What's going on?
Well, we are trying to make sure that our standards are very rigorous and strong, and Common Core has become extremely controversial, mainly from the right, some from the left. So, and testing has been...
Bill, sorry to interrupt you, but tell us, some of us are starting to read headlines about Common Core, and we really don't know what it is. How do you see it? Describe what it is, and then what are the pros and cons of it?
How long do you have? I'll try to be
brief. We'll go to extra innings innings for you.
There are policymakers all over our country, governors, leaders of education departments, those in think tanks. Some years ago, recent years ago, probably 6 years, came to the conclusion if we were going to have compete well in a world that had also good educational systems, and if we were going to deal with the mobility of our populace, military, others, a huge number of Americans move every year to another state, that there was reason to establish standards that
nationwide.
Well, but they're not from the federal government. The federal government didn't have anything to do with it. That's one of the problems, though. The perception is that this is federally mandated. It's not. That's one of the myths. Some people think that it's not as rigorous as the standards now, and that's not true either. So there's a lot of myths out there, and the legislature has signed off on Common Core standards. The State Board of Education signed off on them also, and yet there's pushback. It only applies to mathematics and language arts, English, and it's, language arts. And it doesn't touch on the other subjects even. But, you know, it's fundamental to get the language arts and mathematics correct. There's a little bit of wiggle room when you get to the other courses, but not those. And so I don't mind a debate. I don't mind a reexamination, but I don't want us to be party, and I don't think we're going to allow whatever happens for our standards to be lowered any lower than Common Core has suggested, and we and 46 other states and the District of Columbia have adopted those standards.
If the does the state board, in the absence of specific legislative direction, have the authority to establish standards like this for the local school systems?
That's what we've done.
Yeah, you've done this with respect to
Common Core. Yeah,
with Common Core,
and
with legislative
and also the essential standards too. I mean, we're in the standard setting business. What the local school systems are in is developing the curriculum to make sure that those standards are accomplished. And so that's what people need to know, is that we're not dictating curriculum. No national group is dictating curriculum. But we're trusting the local people to do that. And yet then you get, it's going to be tested. So there's accountability here too. And the testing didn't come to North Carolina until the mid-90s, and it is controversial.
Yeah, we'll talk about that in a minute. I want to get the authority lines straight. One of the legislative proposals is to mandate, say, the teaching of cursive writing, and then also the multiplication table in public schools. And surely the legislature, as the supreme authority, would have the authority to do that by statute. But what would without that direction or without any clue, would the state board have the authority to impose that requirement on the local school systems?
That's a good question. Don't take me as an authority, but I think we could. But there is a concern, particularly as it relates to cursive writing. And, the multiplication tables, I think I recall that's part of Common Core standards part of North Carolina standards. I mean, but you know how politics is. When there's a concern, so you get some legislation to deal with a concern. And I think the cursive writing thing has a measure of concern with it, because I was with a member of one of our local school boards, and he had looked into this, and you need to be able to sign your name. And so he is very strongly in support of cursive. But the fact is, cursive is still being taught across the state, but there are probably places where it's not being taught across the state.
And one of them might be in Chapel Hill. It's interesting. I think the school systems here Orange County and Tappahoe have different approaches.
Well,
we'd all have different opinions.
Yes, right.
We need to take a break. We're visiting with Bill Coby, our Chapel Hill neighbor, who is the new chair of the State Board of Education. He and I'll be right back. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. My guest is Bill Coby. Bill's our friend and neighbor here in Chapel Hill. If you're younger than I am or new to Chapel Hill, you might not know that Bill was the athletic director here at Carolina. He's also a congressman. He's been active in politics, ran for governor, and he and I probably, I don't know, we're not 180 degrees. I mean, on some things we're not on the same wavelength, but it's my privilege to have been Bill Coby's friend. And Bill, one of the things that worries liberals, conservatives, and people who don't claim any kind of political background is testing. And I can remember your predecessor, remote predecessor now, Jay Robinson, felt very strongly that on the basics you had to test, or you couldn't really know
right.
for sure what was going on. And if you didn't test the kids, you were doing them a disservice. On the other hand, some of my friends are teachers who say, well, all we do is test, and we don't have time to teach, and we're teaching for the test rather than doing the kinds of things that seem to have worked for our public schools before, when teachers believe in what they're teaching rather than teaching for some testing. All of this must be cascading on you right now.
It is. And on the governor and on the legislature. It's fair to say that teachers are very upset about the amount of testing that's going on, that principals are very upset, that superintendents are very upset, and we over in Raleigh at the Department of Public Instruction are having to absorb a lot of that unhappiness. And I agree with Jay. We've got to test. And I guess when Jay was there, we were testing for achievement. Now we test for growth. Now we test for teacher effectiveness and school effectiveness, and there's a whole lot of testing going on. It was more controversial, I understand, when Jay originally introduced this concept. But the governor has asked his education advisor, Eric Gukin, to take a really close look at this, and we're going to all participate in this. And I think... DJ, it's more about let's find a balance point that doesn't take so much classroom time and relieve some of the stress, but get some results that we can use to improve the schools, get the right teachers in the classes, and see so that we can see the kind of achievement and growth we all want.
You know, when I was coming along, there was no way to test us other than sort of the college admissions test and things like that that were complicated and expensive operations. Now, given the kinds of testing vehicles that have been developed using the new technology and the software that's developed, you're able to test students along the way as a part of the learning process.
Right.
And is nobody going to be able to figure out a way that you blend testing and teaching for results, sort of on an everyday basis?
There's two types of tests. One is called a formative test, where you give a brief test to a student to gauge where they are and what they're learning and what they're not learning. I think everybody is generally in favor of the local school districts doing some formative testing. But we're talking about more of measuring results and accountability. And I've asked the question when I heard that the end of course tests for a course of study through the year is a four-hour test. And I said, well, when I took the SATs, I just walked in there and took it, and no preparation, no practice test. Now you have all these practice tests to get ready for the test. And then I found out that originally the tests were time tests, 90 minutes, which takes a lot less time. But then there was pushback that our students need to have as long as they want to get through the test. So 4 hours came down. So when I talk about balance point, that's what I'm talking about. Let's revisit the number of tests we're giving, what we're giving, and how long we allow for each test. I think it's reasonable, and I haven't found anybody that has disagreed that it isn't reasonable. But I don't expect everybody to be happy at the end.
Yeah, yeah.
Because we got to balance all these interests.
No, I'm sure it isn't. And you brainstorm. What I remember from politics and my work in the legislature is that every year there's somebody like me, you know, who's been elected to office,
right?
Who has the magic answer and is ready to impose it. It gets right. imposed, and then next year you have to change it because it wasn't worked out the way you're talking right. about, which is with everybody at the table.
Right.
I wonder, you know, teaching for the test, and I at the same time, getting back to Jay, you got to figure out a way to measure performance both of the teacher and the student, but you don't want the teacher teaching for that test all year long. So I'm thinking, don't even tell the teacher whether the test whether the test is going to be on history or whether it's going to be on English or whether it's going to be on science or whether it's what it's going to be on. But we'll measure your performance. But you're not going to know. You're not going to know what test you're going to give. So you got to work on all.
Ideally, they're teaching to the standards.
Yeah, yeah.
And ideally, there's some way to adjust statistically the results, and that goes on. And we have SAS out here that's very heavily involved in this. And I did take statistics in college, and I believe that you don't have to have very long tests to get a fairly accurate measure of what is going on. Yeah, it might not be. It might be plus or minus more than you'd like, but you've got to balance this thing.
Bill, you're working for the governor in one respect. You
know, yes.
He's appointed you, and you have responsibilities that go beyond what his direction is. He's got an education advisor.
Right.
You've got an elected superintendent.
Right.
And then you have the chairs of education policy in both the Senate and the House who are—
You mean the committee chairs?
Yeah, the committee chairs.
Yeah.
And who's going to call the shot?
Well, from my perspective, I have to be loyal to what the governor wants to accomplish. He's duly elected by all the people, and try to implement what he wants, and be loyal to what the General Assembly passes in legislation. I think we're all called to do that. And, of course, they give us plenty of leeway because they can't micromanage the enterprise of education. It's just not possible. So I'm not unfamiliar with that. I am very familiar with it because I was a Secretary of Environment, Health, and Natural Resources under Jim Martin, and it's the same deal. I mean, I was his secretary, but there were statutes in place, and I had to work both of those for the good of the people of North Carolina.
Well, every now and then when you're dean or secretary, the governor, or somebody more than likely, somebody on the governor's staff would call you and tell you got to do something, and you'd have to say— first of all, you'd be suspicious whether or not the governor was telling him to call or whether he's calling on his own. And then you have to look at what your statutory limits are and what your— I mean—
I don't believe I ever had that happen.
Oh, come on.
No, seriously. I was called with suggestions. But, you know, Governor Jim Martin was a great leader. And he said, you go and you manage that department. If you need to get me involved, just give me a call. And of course I did, or I'd send him a memo and ask him, you know, tell him, here are the facts, here are the options, here is my recommendation. He would turn it around in 48 hours. I mean, that's the kind of guy he was. He passed on not just the responsibility, but the authority to get the job.
My buddy Jim Harrington didn't call you from time to time and say—
No, I worked for Jim Harrington. You know, before I was a secretary, I was deputy secretary of—
But I mean, even when Jim was gone, he didn't—
No, I was one of his deputy secretaries. There were two of them, and he was a great boss. I mean, I've been so fortunate to be able to work. He was like a planning department of one. So he told me and the other deputy, Tommy Harrelson, who succeeded him ultimately, he said, look, you guys run this department operationally, and I'll back you all the way. And he meant it. He was a terrific leader.
You're talking about a couple of guys that I admire a lot too. But now, have you got that same relationship with the governor today and his staff?
Yeah, I do. I do.
You don't ever get a call in which they say, look, we're the governor's getting a lot of complaints about cursive writing, and can he take care of that for us?
I haven't got that call yet. It's very much an interactive thing with his chief of staff, with his education advisor, with his budget office, that sort of thing. And I'm delighted that it's a team approach. You know, DJ, when I talk to anybody, I say, you know, I want us to operate as a team. That's what I'm used to. And if you really want to get me upset, don't operate as a team.
Sounds like the former athletic director.
Yeah. I was a coach too. And you can't operate independently, and everybody's got to get along, or you're going to see bad results on that scoreboard.
I'm visiting with Bill Kobe, who is our neighbor, and he's the chair of the State Board of Education. Former coach and former athletic director, and he talks like right now he's giving the locker room talk, and I love it.
You've been there.
Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is DG Martin. I'm visiting with Bill Kobe. If you join us late, Bill is our neighbor in Chapel Hill. He's the highest-ranking appointed education official in the state as a chair of the State Board of Education. On the other hand, he's got no responsibility for community colleges or for the university system, but I think no authority, really, but you do have— you do feel a responsibility, don't you, to work a better way for there to be coordination between these three?
Well, a huge responsibility. And our Governor McCrory is very concerned about the working relationships. I have to say, from my perspective, they've improved over time, but they're not as good as they need to be. You know, the university system just did their strategic plan, and they used the word articulation, where to get the courses aligned right so that those students coming out of the community college can get the necessary credit to go forward to get their four-year degree. And we have a huge responsibility in K-12 to educate the young people so that if they're accepted in the four-year institution or the community college, they don't have to face remedial work. And the remedial work is way out of line at this point in time, and we have a responsibility to get that right. We need to work together. We need to have a seamless education for North Carolina. Some exciting things going on now. There's a lot of early college programs across the state where local school districts are working with the community college so a young person can get their high school diploma and their associate's degree at the same time for certain specialized jobs that they would be eligible for. So just add one thing, DG. The governor has reconstituted the education cabinet, and I'm co-chairing a committee of that cabinet with President Tom Ross, and our charge on that particular committee is to try to bring the budgets together and where we can share budgets for certain things such as safety or personnel matters, that we should find those to bring about efficiencies for the whole education enterprise.
Well, what are the obstacles?
Well, it's like everything else in life. Communications is the greatest problem. If you don't get everybody sitting at the same table, talking to each other, you're not going to have efficiencies and cooperation that you need. And so this is more about getting us together to look at how we can work together for the benefit of the whole state of North Carolina. And it's sounds like common sense, but I know of a case where, you know, with the use of technology in education throughout our system, there has not been the kind of interaction that's needed. And it's just now starting, and it has a lot to do with one individual who made it his business to learn what was going on and talk to everybody and then talk back to those same people. I mean, I know it sounds crazy, but, and guess who it is? It's Matt Schakowsky.
Is that
right here in town?
Well.
And because he got very interested in online education, MOOCs, and he's a pretty sharp guy.
Well, yeah, those of us who know him know that he is a sharp guy, and he's also got a high level of energy on tasks that he's interested in, which is good. I wonder, given the technology that is available and the ability to assess the capability and what has been learned, whether or not there is a place for the public schools or the community colleges or the university to be in the certification business of people who are not their students, but who have attained level of competence in various fields, so that the state does not necessarily have to spend money requiring people who don't need to go through a course to go through the course to get the credit.
DG, I love that kind of thinking, because I think we need to think outside the box. And what's wrong with giving a certificate to somebody who has proven that they've reached a level of competency so that they are employable? Because I know the emphasis years ago was not on getting a degree. I when I went to alumni meetings here at Carolina, I stopped asking the older alumni when they graduated. I just asked them when they attended Carolina, because a lot of them couldn't afford to stay away from the farm or the local business long enough to stay here to get a degree. And yet they've been highly successful in life. So I'm not sure that just getting a degree is the answer. I mean, Bill Gates, Steve Jobs, they didn't get a degree, but I think they did pretty well.
They got something. They got something as a result of the connections that they made at college,
right,
or the start that they got.
Yes.
So we don't know as much about the real reasons for success of education as we sometimes pretend to know. It's a lot of times here I'm preaching. You're supposed to be preaching.
No.
A lot of time it's the individual connective link that they get with either another student or the faculty
or
member.
Or a professor. And, you know, I'm for creativity. It excites me. Change. I embrace it. I love it. And yet I realize that it's hard for some people. And to accept the Bill Gates and the Steve Jobs, because they're not going to be like everybody else, and yet they've contributed mightily to the public good.
Yeah. Well, gosh, I wish we had time to talk some more. You've got me in my creative mode, and maybe it's a good thing we stopped, because the folks who are listening wanted to hear you, not me.
No.
But Bill Covey, thanks for coming. Thanks for providing this link with the state education establishment, with those of us who live in Chapel Hill, and look forward, hoping to come back and give us a report after you've been on the job a little bit longer.
Thank you, DJ.
Thanks to Bill Kobe. Thanks to all y'all for listening. Thanks to you specifically, and hope that you'll come back and join us again. I'll be right back here with Who's Talking Soon.